Hello, I'm John Rossi, a touring drummer with a love of all things animal. When I'm on the road, I visit as many zoos, aquariums. Hey, wait a minute. What's going on? Hey, what's going on there? Hello? Hello?
We interrupt your regularly scheduled program to bring you Rossafari Zoo News. News you can use from the world of zoos and conservation. Every week, we bring you breaking news and analysis from around the globe, featuring the animals you love and the people who care for them. And here's your anchorman, John Rossi.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to Rossafari Zoo News, your look at everything going on in the world of zoos and aquariums and conservation and animal weirdness. And speaking of animal weirdness, I'm laughing at the start of this episode because as I hit record and started speaking, Paradiddle, one of my dogs, decided to come running directly over to me and into me. So thank you for the assist, Paradiddle. Speaking of dogs, I mentioned on previous Zoo News episodes that a new dog is joining the family, and that dog is named Flam, and Flam has officially arrived. I got to go with Miles, actually, and pick up Flam, and Flam is a mini Aussie and is perfect for a Sith Lord. Flam has a lot of destructive energy right now. It's very adorable. But yeah, you know, it's that puppy life, but things are going really well. I'm really excited about Flam, and make sure that you are following along on Instagram and Facebook as I will post the occasional Flam photo. As a matter of fact, make sure you're doing that anyway. It's at Rossafari. And also, you know, we're on Twitter at Rossafari and on TikTok at Rossafari Pod. And those are the places where you can tag me if you see any Zoo News-worthy stories. And then I'll say your name at the end of that week's Zoo News episode, because that's how all this works. You can also email me, rossafaripod@gmail.com, and send me those stories, and then we'll talk about them on here. And we are actually very excited this week because I have a special guest on this week's episode of Zoo News, something we've been trying to do a little bit more this year. There's a slightly sad story. Okay, it's actually a darn sad story, but that we're going to be talking about, and I'm bringing in somebody to talk to you about it. So get ready for that. But before we get to that, I'm also going to take a moment to say happy birthday to my father, Stephen Rossi. This episode is dropping on April 21st, and that's my dad's birthday, which is really exciting for him, pretty exciting for me, and most of you are already hoping I move on. But hey, if you know my dad, or just one of those people who likes telling random people happy birthday, tell my dad happy birthday. And with that, I think that's really all I got this week. Not a lot to update you on. Nobody else has tried to kidnap anyone else in my family, so let's hit it.
One, two, three, four.
Ow, there's a funky monkey, tree kangaroo, or a binturong.
It's Zoo News,
yeah. All right, so we're going to start off this week with something that really actually isn't Zoo News, but I know that a lot of you work for zoos, and you have a lot of keepers and vets and stuff that listen. So I wanted to start off with this story, which is that in Grand Teton National Park, there was recently a dead mountain lion discovered, and when they did a necropsy on it, they found out that the mountain lion had died from avian influenza, also known as bird flu. Now, we've talked about that a lot. This is a disease that seems to be going around the bird population of the U.S. and Canada and such as migrations happen, and it leads to zoos at different times having to close their aviaries and have some birds off exhibit and all that stuff. However, bird flu has rarely affected mammals. So the fact that there was a mountain lion found dead by bird flu means that if you're a mammal keeper, you need to start to keep your eyes on that situation when bird flu is affecting the flocks of birds at your zoo, you know, as far as when they are on display and stuff. So this is something that definitely needs to be researched more, and I'm not entirely sure what this means exactly, but I wanted to drop it here right at the beginning so that all of my keeper friends hear that warning and start to keep their ears open and see what's going on with bird flu transferring to non-birds, even if it means it's not living up to its name. And now it's time to say goodbye to a couple of animals at zoos. And there are a couple of really personal ones in here, actually. So we're going to start off by saying goodbye to Henry, the Aldabra tortoise that lived at Reptiland Zoo in Pennsylvania. Now, this is not an episode that you've heard yet, but I have been to the zoo and actually got to hang out with the tortoises there. So this one is very near and dear to my heart and makes me very sad. So Henry was not even like super duper old, but it turned out that he had a prolapse in his reproductive system, which is really problematic. He was just one of those animals that all kinds of guests really enjoyed, and he did meet and greet. So a lot of people have rubbed his neck and fed him lettuce and all that kind of stuff. And so it's just a really sad story, and I feel like kind of the theme for some of these stories today with the losses is just that there are some really awesome charismatic animals out there that aren't the charismatic species that you think of. And Henry was definitely one of those. So sending all the love to the entire team at Reptiland. Another animal we have to say goodbye to is Titan, the 12-year-old raccoon who has lived at the Lehigh Valley Zoo for the last almost 9 years. Now, before any of you get completely freaked out, don't worry. This isn't the raccoon that you heard an entire episode about. That's Miko. Miko is still doing fine. But Titan was an on exhibit raccoon who was still really charismatic and really cool. You know, people just love seeing raccoons at zoos. I know I do. And unfortunately, back in October, Titan was diagnosed with a bladder tumor and surgery was not a possibility. So they did medical management with medications and such for as long as they could. But unfortunately, Titan's life got harder and it became the humane choice to euthanize Titan. So they did. And he will be missed. Just a total goober. But don't worry, Miko is there and doing well. And I am sure that a lot of the staff of the Lehigh Valley Zoo is probably going over and getting a little Miko time to feel a little less sad because Titan was awesome. So sending our condolences. And now for the third loss this week, I'm actually going to flip this over to an interview that I did this evening for y'all. Go ahead and say who you are.
All right. Hi, my name is Victoria. I am the field supervisor of reptiles at Naples Zoo, and I'm going to be a future guest on the podcast here.
Yes, we recorded the episode. It is wonderful. There will probably be lots of me making fun of Victoria in the intro, so you can look forward to that. But for now, we're actually here to discuss a more serious topic. So, yeah. You know, let's tell everyone what you're here for.
Yeah, so today I'm here to talk about a passing of a really special animal that just happened recently. As I was thinking about it, I'm pretty sure that I mentioned her quite a few times in our podcast when we were recording it. Yeah, especially because my first moments of, you know, being a keeper and walking into our Python exhibit was one of the first moments I remember. So just to give everyone a little backstory, our reticulated Python, Ka, she passed away earlier in last week. And it definitely was really hard, her passing, because at 22 years old, she was a really iconic snake that not only influenced a lot of her keepers along the way, but a lot of guests too. A lot of kids would run up to the Python exhibit and just be amazed at how large of a snake she was. She came in at 19 feet, 7.5 inches. So big snake.
Big snake.
Yeah, she also had a really great personality in the fact that, yes, she was feisty. She could be. And especially, you know, when she had her food face on, you know, she was ready to go. But for the most part, she was really just kind of calm. And, you know, you could easily service the exhibit. And she lived with her roommate, Sammy, the Burmese python. And, you know, she just was incredible for her species. Her coloration was really beautiful. So it was definitely hard, especially, you know, I had worked with her since day one of my keeping career, not only at Naples Zoo, but in general. So, you know, walking in every single day and seeing her, that's the first thing we do. And the reptile team is we check on our pythons. That's kind of the first stop. And so we would go, we would check on her, and just every morning seeing her. It was just really cool to be around her and actually get to work with her, learn all of her behaviors and such. So yeah, every single day, you know, being by her. A lot of coworkers too really were fascinated by her, and she left a huge impression. So pretty tough when, I mean, when all animals, you know, it's unfortunately part of the job when working with animals, but, you know, when something really iconic, and it's definitely difficult and it leaves an impression.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Sorry for your loss. How, was this like a, you know, humane euthanasia call had to be made? And if so, like, what's that process like?
So actually in Kaw's case, it did happen naturally. We had some health concerns that we were definitely monitoring very closely. But with snakes and most reptiles, it's really difficult because their health doesn't change as obvious as most, you know, mammals say. They don't show it very well. So you don't have a whole lot to go by. But in Kaw's case, we saw just some like bloated area, kind of more towards, you know, her tail end. So we were monitoring it. We took x-rays to make sure that, you know, it wasn't anything that we could see on there. And so we were definitely concerned that something was kind of weird. We fed her because she's on a normal schedule and things like that. And we fed her. She ate completely fine, which is one of the indicators that you can use with reptiles, just because if they stop eating, you know, that's one sign. And she ate, everything was fine, but that part of her was still pretty bloated. So after some other kind of recommendations from our veterinarian, who definitely was involved the whole process, from the start of when we noticed something was not right, you know, she definitely came in, looked, did all the medical side of things. And then when we were actually, the day she passed, when we came in, that was the night before, or the few days before, we had planned to actually do surgery on her, to actually open up that area that was bloated and, you know, take a peek and see what we can do. And we walked in that morning that we were supposed to do surgery, and that's when we found her, unfortunately, already passed in that area. But after her necropsy, which is performed on all of the zoo animals after their passing, whether it's humane euthanasia or natural, we did find some interesting things. Now, we won't get her actual report back for quite some time. It does take a little bit of time. But from you know, initial view from our veterinarian, she did see a large mass in that area that we were concerned of with the bloat. And then we also found cancer in her heart, lungs, and liver.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, she had probably developed this cancer, you know, who knows when, but had shown no signs of that at all, and was still moving around. It wasn't until this bloated area that we physically were able to see it. And that just, that's what makes reptiles sometimes so difficult, is they literally show no signs.
Yeah, no, I know. It's really crazy. And I mean, obviously they can't show signs like out in the wild and stuff, but man, I wish they could figure it out in captivity that they're allowed to.
I know. If she can like point her tail to the part that was hurting or something, be like, hint, hint.
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. How's the team been doing in general?
The team, it definitely hit, especially Scott, who I did my podcast with. He'll be featured as well. He had worked with her from, you know, the beginning, when she came and was younger, and then saw her on this side of things and saw how she really transformed. So it hit him pretty hard. But the team, just like we kind of always do, we get right back to it, and we talk about it and stuff like that, make sure that everyone's feeling okay. But we still do continue on with work. But Sammy, our Burmese python, she's doing okay too. We make sure to check in on her since she's lived with cough for quite a long time now. So check in on her, and she's doing all right too.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear. I am very sorry for your loss, but you know, I have to say, one of the nice little things of Ka's legacy is that, though, I think we are probably really friends now because of Ka. Because like, we did our interview the first day I was at the zoo, and it was fine. It was cool. We got along. We did the thing. But then I wanted to see the keeper chat, which happened to be you, and we ended up chatting there. And then you came and saw the show and the whole thing. Like, we actually are like friends now, and that's because of a snake. And I just think that's really cool. I was really sad when I saw that Ka had passed.
Yeah, me too. I mean, you don't realize how much animals influence you, but she was definitely one that had a big impact. And yeah, it's I'm happy that you came back to the zoo the day after, just because you had time and got to see us in our python exhibit with her. So that is a really cool memory to have.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing this. I'm sure my audience loves to hear, you know, what that is like a little bit more than just me saying sad news out of Naples. Yeah. So thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem. And I also, you know, because you hear a lot of connections to, you know, mammals, and people can kind of relate to that in a sense because you have your cat or dog potentially at home. But I think sometimes, you know, people forget how close of a relationship you can have with a reptile. So
that's why I wanted you to do this more than anything else. I mean, also because you're awesome and I think this is important in general. But like, come on, we're talking about a snake. And yet, you know, it's a very cool animal that has had a huge impact on your life. And just, yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I could talk all day about Ka.
Oh, I remember.
Yes.
Awesome. Thank you. Oh, well, there you have it. Thank you again, Vittoria, for being on this episode and also for a future episode of the interview podcast. And yeah, yay you. Sorry about Ka, but glad that we get to be friends because of her. Moving on, the Toronto Zoo did something really interesting recently after the passing of Samson the grizzly bear, who had been at the zoo for 24 years. So the bear, also known as the Makua in the language of Indigenous people of Toronto, is really important to the Indigenous people there. And so the Indigenous Relations team arranged a ceremony with Indigenous knowledge keepers to mark the passing of Samson. And the knowledge keepers conducted the ceremony in the Canadian Domain area for zoo staff and volunteers using various medicines, a pipe ceremony, and songs. Samson was present, and the ceremony conductors gave him a cedar bath. It's very interesting. Some of the people from the Tsimshian people from the northwest coast of British Columbia have very strong connections to grizzlies. And so this was to represent this. And those people were at the zoo for the ceremony. And it was just a really cool and very different way to say goodbye to an animal. Or as they put it, they know it's not saying goodbye, but rather a temporary parting where they will see him on the other side. So it's pretty cool that they did that and that they did it at the zoo, you know, with Samson present, so to speak. So I thought that was very cool. The San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance has announced the birth of the world's second successfully cloned Kowalski's horse, also known as a pea horse. This is really important because the wild Kowalski horse population has very little genetic diversity since they were almost completely wiped out. And so you can now reintroduce animals that were gone because of the whole cryobanking thing that we've talked about here a bunch. You can now clone animals from those genes and then introduce those genetics into wild populations. And this is just what the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance did. This is amazing. Science is so freaking cool, and zoos are the best. The Minnesota Zoo has announced that in just under 100 days, they will be celebrating the grand opening of their new treetop tail. This is a project that repurposed their former monorail track into the world's longest elevated pedestrian loop. It takes guests up to 32 feet above the ground to provide an immersive and accessible experience in nature, along with unique views of some of your favorite animals and habitats. The Treetop Trail officially opens on Friday, July 28th at the Minnesota Zoo. We all know that one of the goals of a good zoo and aquarium is to promote conservation and conservation-minded thinking, and the National Aquarium in Baltimore is taking this to a very cool level. They have officially created a guide for when you're visiting Baltimore that can be used to create a very special conservation-minded visit, both inside the aquarium's doors and beyond. So if you go to their Instagram page and click on guides, you'll be able to see all kinds of cool stuff that you can do in Baltimore that celebrates conservation. So go check that out and find some other cool conservation-y things to do the next time you are in Baltimore visiting the aquarium. The Chester Zoo has announced the birth of a newborn aardvark, and this is the first time in the 90-year history of the zoo. So congratulations to everyone at the Chester Zoo, except for the person who mentioned that it is a newborn aardvark that has been born at the zoo, because redundancy is irritating. No, just kidding, but that was how it was phrased, and it made me laugh. But I'm really excited about this aardlet. So congratulations to the Chester Zoo. Oh, and while we're giving out congratulations, a huge congratulations to our friend Colleen and Tammy and Mark and everyone at the Cincinnati Zoo on the birth of bat-eared fox kits. Foxlets. These are male kits, and they were born to Frankie and Otis, the bat-eared fox parents that you have heard about many times on many episodes from the Cincinnati Zoo on this podcast. So this is really exciting news. These two are really, really cute. Make sure you're following at Cincinnati Zoo and also at Zookeeper Colleen to get the best pictures and videos of these adorable little goobers. Oh, and while we're talking about exciting births, congratulations to the Zoo de Douai-Lafontaine on the birth of their first ever okapi. It's an okaplet. Now, as Raw Safari fans, you guys know that okapi are fake animals. So really what I'm saying is congratulations on the completion of your amniotronic animal. And we know they're not real. But, you know, just on the off chance that I'm wrong about that, I do want to congratulate the zoo on this exciting birth, especially since it's the first time they've ever had an okaplet at their zoo. The Nashville Zoo has announced that they are officially putting together a skunk breeding program at the zoo. Now, Nashville does some really amazing breeding. They're awesome with tamanduas, they're awesome with clouded leopards, and now they're doing a skunk breeding program. And the idea here is that if any AZA facilities are interested in acquiring skunk kits, and when I say kits, that's what skunklets are called. I'm not saying like a kit where you build your own skunk. You probably knew that. But anyway, you are able to reach out to the Nashville Zoo and they will help bolster the AZA skunk population. Very cool. This next initiative is something that I thought was particularly cool. The Columbus Zoo has announced a partnership with the Columbus Library, which allows them to offer free visits to the zoo through their Culture Pass program. So anybody who is a customer of the library in Columbus, they can go and borrow a one-time pass, which must be checked out in person, to visit the zoo for free. So it's like taking out a book, only you go to the zoo. And I just think that's really, really cool and really inspiring. I hope that gets some people who don't necessarily have access to the zoo all the time the chance to go and see what an amazing place it is. So this next story is apparently proof that I am a psychic. Okay. I'm not a psychic, but literally, I believe it was just last week's episode where I talked about the fact that now that Memphis is down to one panda and that that panda is leaving at the end of the month, I had some bad feelings and more importantly had been told from people more knowledgeable than me that it was very likely that the panda keepers at the National Zoo and Zoo Atlanta were going to start to hear from some of these crazy people who had been attacking Memphis for no actual reason. And no joke, this week, both the Zoo Atlanta team and the National Zoo have put out information saying that they've been getting a lot of questions and a lot of people reaching out and asking a lot of stuff about their pandas. And so they both came out and put out, you know, basically statements saying how long the pandas are expected to stay, what the length of the lease is, that their pandas are doing well. But then I also went and checked out the comments and y'all, it's seriously escalated just in the last week. I would like to officially say it's not my fault. I just happened to catch wind that this was going to be happening. But my goodness, it's going to be a rough go of it, I think, for the social media teams there and for the panda keepers, just like it was at Memphis for so long. So just an interesting little update. And like I said, if you happen to be at either of those facilities and or Memphis for the rest of the month, and, you know, especially if you see panda keepers, give them love, give them encouragement, let them know that you know that they're doing an awesome job, because I promise y'all, they are doing an awesome job. Awesome job. The Buffalo Zoo has teamed up with a company in Western New York to turn animal waste from their herbivores into compost that can be used in gardens, which is pretty cool. They're literally using tons of their animal waste to do this. And of course, the compost is called zoo poo. Now that's what I call a
poop story.
A new zoo has opened in Texas. It is called Texas Zoofari Park, and it is located in Kaufman, Texas, which is not too far from Dallas or Waco or even Shreveport, Louisiana. And it turns out that Zoofari is not just one park, although this one is, but it is actually a series of parks that operate in different places. It seems like they're trying to take the model of something like a Sea Life, the aquarium chain that you'll find in different malls and other places, and kind of do that with zoos, including a drive-through safari park area and kangaroo walkabouts and that kind of stuff. And they're trying to make it into like a chain where you can go and see kind of the same thing wherever you go. So interesting and definitely something worth keeping an eye on. And then last but not least for the zoo news section this week, there's a really interesting story out of the Topeka Zoo in Topeka, Kansas. So in 2021, the lion pride there lost its last male, and they are now getting a new lion in to replace that male. But in the time in between 2021 and now, one of the females in the pride actually started to sprout a mane. Now, this is something that can happen occasionally when a pride becomes all female, but it is incredibly rare and very, very strange to have happen in captivity. There's also not been able to be any research done on what happens to a female lion, a lioness, that has started to sprout a mane if a male comes and joins the pride. So along with just adding a cool animal to the pride and kind of restoring some balance there, this is also going to be a chance to get some cutting edge research on what happens to lionesses that start sprouting manes once male lions show up. So that's going to be really exciting in a paper that I read, and probably none of you do, but that's okay. I'll report on it here. All right. Let's move on from Zoo News.
Stereotypical animal podcast theme song. Here to bring you to conservation news.
This is one of those stories that is both sad and also kind of duh. So, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has officially declared the Eastern American puma, also known as a cougar, mountain lion, etc., extinct. Now, this is just one of the mountain lion subspecies, so don't worry, there are still mountain lions out there. But it has officially been declared extinct. Now, that is sad, and we don't like extinction and all of that. But here's where some of this stuff gets goofy. The last time that one of these particular subspecies of puma was seen was 1938. And it has, in 2023, finally been declared extinct. That is done through legislation that was passed in the 70s, so, you know, 40 years after the last one of these animals was seen. So, you know, yeah, it is sad, and it's always bad to know that we wiped another species out, or a subspecies in this case, because we're good at that. But also, it seems like maybe the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service needs to get their paperwork moving a little faster. I'm just saying. The Ohio River has been named America's second most endangered river out of all of the rivers in America, in part because of industrial, municipal, and agricultural pollution from the Ohio River's watershed, and also in part because of the toxic explosion in East Palestine caused by the Norfolk Southern Railroad derailment. So, yeah, not great for the Ohio River. On the other hand, this is the closest that, like, people in Cleveland have gotten to winning anything for a while. Sorry, Browns fans. And in case you were wondering, the most endangered river in the United States is the Colorado River. So, Ohio still has some work to do. That's not what we're trying to encourage here. But yeah, so the Ohio River is climbing the charts. But even with a major chemical spill, the Colorado River is still more polluted. So we've talked on this podcast before about the fact that there were sea urchins in the Caribbean that were dying off at a crazily alarming rate, and also really, really quickly. And nobody really knew why this was happening. Well, now some scientists have figured out why it was happening. It turns out that there is a single cell organism known as a ciliate, which is a tiny parasite that was attacking the sea urchins and wiping them out very quickly. The research that was done to figure this out took about 4 months, which is astonishing because based on other times that stuff like this has happened, it would be expected that it would take around 8 to 10 years to figure out what was going on. So 4 months is absolutely, absolutely incredible. the situation had already been resolved before this was discovered, so there isn't like a treatment plan right now. And unfortunately, researchers have still not figured out exactly what caused this to happen. So they don't really know what to look for to prevent it from happening again. But at least the cause is now understood, and these studies can, you know, go on and they can figure all this out down the road. We talked earlier this episode about the dangers of the avian influenza, also known as bird flu. And unfortunately, it seems that 18 critically endangered California condors have now died between Arizona and Utah because of this disease, with 5 more under care and expected to die. Even though the California Condor Recovery Program has been incredible, we've talked about that a lot on here, they are still the rarest bird species in North America. So losing 18 or 23 of these birds is really, really devastating. I don't know what we're going to do about bird flu, y'all. I've had a lot of experts tell me that they think that both COVID and bird flu are never really going to go away. They're just going to be things we kind of learn to live with and adapt to. But in the case of bird flu, even if we do, I mean, yes, evolution and all of that, but there's not really a way in the short term to adapt other species to this disease. And, you know, for endangered species, especially like condors, this is devastating news. Sorry to end this section on such a low note, but here's a parody song.
It's time for other news. It's time for other news. Hey, all right now, right now it's time. It's time for other news. Hey, it's a segue to the podcast.
Y'all, this is possibly my favorite story of the week. So you may remember that last week I told you about a bald eagle that had gone viral because it was protecting a rock in its nest and getting, you know, very aggressive towards keepers and other eagles that were approaching it and that whole thing. This is a bald eagle named Murphy. And guess what? His rock hatched. Oh, okay. That's not how that works. But the World Bird Sanctuary has replaced the rock with an orphaned eagle chick, eaglet. So Murphy actually gets to be a dad. He protected what he thought was his egg, and now it has hatched and he has his own eaglet to raise. This is the cutest thing ever. There was some initial concern that Murphy, having never been a dad before, and, you know, thinking a rock is an egg. No, that I'm just adding that commentary. Might not be a great foster dad, but they decided to give him a chance and did some very cautious introductions using a cage and a howdy and everything. And it worked out. And the two have started bonding, and it seems to be going really, really well. And this is the best story ever. This next story is kind of crazy, and that's coming from a guy who just told you about a bird that hatched a rock, kind of. Anyway, it turns out that in northern Wisconsin, a bunch of loons were found on the ground. These are really large birds that take a lot of space to get going and get up into the air. And it turns out that the atmosphere in Wisconsin was such that loons, which were migrating through the area, started to develop ice on their body as they were flying, and then they would crash land because of the ice, which is kind of just insane to think about. There were just loons falling from the sky. Loons are really interesting in that they cannot walk, and they also can't just be like taken to a small pond for release, because in order to start flying, they need to get about a quarter mile or more of open water to run across on the water and get airborne. It's really weird. The government there explained to the people there how to handle if they saw loons, who to contact and all that stuff. But what a crazy story. I guess you could call it Loony. Loony? Get it? Loony? Loony. It was loony. And last but not least in other news this week, a South American rocket launch was really impressive. This is the culmination of decades of vision and ambition pushing the boundaries of science. And nobody cared because there was a sloth that appeared in a highlight reel leading up to this rocket launch, which is the European Space Agency's first time ever sending a rocket mission to Jupiter. But nobody cared because this really, really adorable sloth showed up. The pictures are adorable. And it was all anyone could talk about with this incredible, you know, scientific breakthrough space launch, amazing thing. Nobody cares because sloths are awesome.
Oh, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays, animal, oh, animal, animal holidays. Hey!
All right. And so it is still April, which means it is still Ape Awareness Month and National Frog Month. And then when we get to our individual days, today is the 21st, which is not an animal holiday, but is my father's birthday. I'll say it again. So happy birthday, Dad. The 22nd is Earth Day. The 23rd is International Palace's Cat Day. The 25th is World Penguin Day. The 26th is Audubon Day and International Flamingo Day. And the 27th is Hyena Day, World Tapir Day, and Crow and Raven Day. So special shout out to my buddy Russell Crow at Southwick Zoo and all of the other crows and ravens and tapirs and hyenas who very weirdly share a day. And those are your animal holidays for the week. All right, folks, there you have it. Rossafari Zoo News is done for the week again. And I want to remind you all that we do have a Patreon. You can go and support the pod for as little as $3 a month by going to patreon.com/rossafari. I'd like to say thank you to Laura Shank and Kristen Dickey, who are my Red Panda level patrons, and also to Emily Poche, who is my new patron this week. Emily, thank you. Welcome to the family. We love having you here. So if you want to go and check out bonus content from some episodes, some actual bonus episodes, and more, you can do so by going to patreon.com/rossafari. I'd also like to say thank you to everyone who contributed to this week's episode, and there are so many people. First of all, of course, I want to say thank you to Vittoria for doing the interview. I'm recording this episode like right before it goes live. It is Thursday night, y'all. And Vittoria and I were able to connect just earlier tonight, and it was fun and great to catch up, and we did that little interview. So thank you, Vittoria. And in case y'all are wondering, her name is Vittoria. Two T's, not like Victoria. So I'm not saying it wrong. Anyway, I'd also like to say thank you to everyone else who contributed this week, including Deep Breath This Week. Anya Keene, Colleen Lenahan, Kim Cooley, Carrie Kirkpatrick, Kevin Williams, Kristen Khalil, Emily Rockbuck, Jacob Newman, Paul Somo, Michael Sebastian, Chris Gross, Dylan Hoy, Liz Dunleavy, Emily Poche, Laura Shank, Eric Kankar, and Natalie Berry. Thank you all so very much. We'll be back here on Tuesday with a new interview episode. And don't forget, y'all, the words Newsy Credits backwards are Steiderk Yiswen. The Rossafari Podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo. The Tree Trop Trail. No, Tree... The Treetop Trail, the T-Trop Trail, no, that's not it. Okay, we can do this. The Treetop Trail, oh, no, wait, that was right, crap. Okay, all right, we got this.